From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. California Governor Jerry Brown is 80 years old. He has been governor twice, with 28 years in between. And each time, as most of you know, he was reelected to a second term. Monday, though, this era of the Jerry Brown governorship ends. The governor and his wife, Anne, will officially transition to their new home, which has been built on family land in Colusa. That's about an hour northwest of Sacramento. And that's where Cap Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler spent some time with the governor recently. They went to the ranch, and Ben is here to share some of that conversation. Welcome. Glad to have you in the studio.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
This is a conversation and a situation that we knew we'd be coming to. I like the fact that he invited you to join him on the ranch. So set the scene a little bit in that wide open space.
It is a beautiful open space in the rolling foothills of Colusa County, about 20 minutes west of Williams off the I-5. And it's, you know, it was nice to be up there after it had rained. So it was green right. And it smelled fresh. It was cold. And it was, you have a situation where we were looking on Google Maps and the street view, and it showed two barns heavily graffitied and they looked terrible. Well, that's out of date. And it may be intentional that Google Street View hasn't updated that. But right now you've got three beautifully renovated barns, a couple of tiny cottages, that one of which the governor spent the night in while he was building his house along with First Lady and Gus Brown. They have a guest house and they have the house that they live in now, which is very large. A very large open space for the family room and the living room and the dining room, kitchen, and then just one bedroom. Everyone else has to sleep at the guest house, except the dogs, of course, Colusa Brown and Callie Brown, who joined the governor and me and our crew for the interview, which we began by sitting inside talking about policies. In particular, because we've heard from the governor in his NPR exit interview a lot about what he did accomplish, I wanted to ask him about some of the things that maybe didn't get done on his watch.
So we're going to hear the first of two parts of the interview, one being this indoor segment and another being outdoors. You're going to hear Ben's voice first, so let's listen.
You've always been very intentional, at least this go around, in picking your battles. You chose not to take a deeper look at tax reform, even though you've acknowledged the state needs it.
I've had a very deep look at tax reform. That's why I think I have a very clear understanding.
Of why you chose not to tackle it this time?
Of why I don't believe the legislature wants to tackle it, or why I don't think the people want to tackle it. And if given the opportunity in subsequent years, I think what I've said will be proven out. There are problems that aren't always amenable to simple solutions. And there's a lot of talk about tax reform, and actually it's really tax change, because from the day the first tax was enacted, there's always subsequent tax changes. Some of them are called reforms, and some are called loopholes, and some are called other things. But there's no nice way to tax. So people can look at it, and they may come up with a few things. But I have looked deeply into the nature of our current taxes, and I don't think there's a quick major change. I think there's little nibbling around the edges. You can do that. There's always more, which is usually what it is, not less. So based on that, I would say that's not a very fruitful area for gubernatorial leadership.
You also called CEQA reform the Lord's work, and that you've never met a CEQA exemption you didn't like, talking about the California Environmental right. Quality Act, which critics, including you, have said can make it harder to build. But you chose, I think, not to tackle that.
When you say chose, you might say, do you choose to, levitate off your chair? Well, that's not possible. So in the CEQA arena, you have two very powerful forces, building trades and environmentalists. And those two forces are going to block any particular change. Now, you might go to the initiative and spend many millions of dollars, but that would then interfere with other priorities and would also engage in battles that would then block others. And then you'd have to ask me, well, why didn't you do that other thing that got blocked because you went after the CEQA? So the point I would make, you cannot do everything all the time. That's not life. You're not in Sacramento today. You're out here in Rancho Veneta. So we choose, and to choose is to go to one spot instead of another. And that's what I would say on the CEQA front. I don't see any way of making major changes. And I did try some changes, but they get, even the small changes were watered down before they got enacted. So I'd say that's one of the conditions of contemporary government in California.
And I ask because you leave office having accomplished quite a bit, and the state's fiscal shape is strong, but there are, as you know, many Californians who struggle to afford living in California. And between the end of redevelopment agencies early in your term to help balance the budget and the lack of changes in the development process to make it easier and quicker to develop, there are folks who argue that, you know, this happened on your watch, that this...
Wait, what's the it?
Oh, that what happened on your watch? That California's...
Well, what was the it? That home prices got more expensive?
California's housing affordability crisis has deepened.
Housing prices
and
got
poverty
more expensive.
Deepened. Yeah, yeah. And to what extent were you as governor responsible?
I bet your house got more has a higher value now than when you bought it.
But okay, so
why don't we cut it in half and make it more affordable? No, nobody wants to do that. All right, here's what happened. We closed the deficit, and that $27 billion that is now not a deficit, but it's basically a surplus. That happened because of the capitalist growth machine, exemplified by Silicon Valley, by tourism, by agriculture, by the movie industry. All these things have generated almost $1 trillion in new wealth. That drives willing buyers to push the price up, and the willing sellers are only too happy to sell. And that buying and selling in our free society functions exactly the way it did. It has an upside, but it also has a downside. And the downside is that housing in California for many people is not affordable, and we have all the issues that people have remarked on. But I would still say there's a lot of opportunity in this state, and that's why people come here. They don't come here because it's bad, they come here because it's good. And that's one of the dilemmas. I found that in Oakland, that as new money poured into Oakland and condominiums and new buildings were built, then people said, wait a minute, that's gentrifying. But before we had those investments, we had blight, we had downtown with virtually no restaurants, no vitality, and now we do. So unfortunately, the good often comes with the bad. The day is followed by night. And I think that the coming recession will bring down the price of your house and other houses, and that will make things more affordable. But I don't know that it will make people more happy.
You've been credited with taking California from a $27 billion deficit to a what the nonpartisan legislative analyst says is a $23 billion surplus as you leave office. The state budget also grew on your watch from $87 billion general fund in 2011 to $133 billion this final fiscal year, an increase of more than 50%. There's obviously still, although you took some steps to try to tackle the pension liabilities and retiree health liabilities, there are some still there. What would you say to some Californians who might argue that you don't deserve as much of the reputation for fiscal prudence that you often get credited with?
Well, I would say anybody who wants to talk about legacies and reputation, I would be only too happy to agree. When you have a state that increases its wealth by $800 billion in 8 years, you have to expect that government will be a part of that. In fact, government helps cause some of that wealth, but more schooling, more roads, more health care, more child care, more investment in water projects, all of that is what government is. And the idea that we could have a vastly increased wealth with all the problems we have in terms of social problems, environmental problems, and not try to spend some of the money is almost unthinkable. And the only other way around it would be to start, would be to return tax money. Then you would have a recession and you'd have to increase the taxes, which is exactly what Reagan did. He gave money back and then he raised the taxes. And then, so it becomes kind of a ping pong. So I've tried to put it on a steady keel, and I think you can appreciate all that in the next couple of years, because I would venture to say the budgets will grow, and they'll grow particularly because there's so much money. And then after that, they will be cut because we'll be in a recession. And it's that ebb and flow, that rhythm of life that defines all of us as we try to make the best of it.
That is outgoing California Governor Jerry Brown in conversation with Cap Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler. Ben is in the studio with me. It's interesting to hear him lay out in one conversation this idea that the growth in California came at a price, that if you're going to have an increase in many factors of the economy, the growth overall, the surplus is going to go up, that it comes at a cost, and there's going to be the cause and effect. And it almost seemed, in his view, that he didn't think both circumstances, both the circumstance of growth in the state and a prospering populace, could exist at the same time.
He's been known to speak of the difference between problems and conditions. Problems like a budget deficit you have to solve. Conditions will always, in his mind, be there. He takes the longer view, right? The ebb and the flow, the rhythm of life. Mm-hmm. Day follows night. The seasons change. And one way or another, California is going to have a solid budget surplus, or at least a stable budget situation when the economy is strong, some deficits when the economy is poor. The housing market might be a little more affordable when the economy isn't doing so well, but then the housing prices really explode when the economy booms. So he takes the longer view on that, and he tends to point to that as one of the reasons for this big issue that really did develop on his watch, even as he just said, tried to stabilize the budget so that maybe the next recession won't include quite such a big financial crisis.
Something he said earlier was interesting to me, and I'm writing it down as something to watch as the Newsom administration steps into the governorship. Governor Brown said there are problems that aren't amenable to simple solutions. You had asked him about tax reform, and he said it's not a fruitful area for gubernatorial leadership. Mm-hmm. I think he was speaking to the complexity of it. But he's also saying that one person alone isn't going to stake their legacy or their success as a governor on the issue of tax reform. Is that how you heard it?
Yeah, I think not so much the legacy. We spent 6 minutes arguing or going back and forth on whether on the word legacy and how it would or wouldn't apply to him. And we didn't put that part on the air. But certainly about political success, he has to choose his battles. That got to the basis of my first question, is he chose very intentionally what he was going to try to take on and what he was not going to try to take on. He managed, I think just one example would be a lot of times he went after some of the state government unions on pensions and local government unions on the pension issue. I never really saw him truly take on the California Teachers Association, less mm-hmm. so on pensions and less so on other areas, other budget issues and the like. And I think that's one example of how he chose his battles. He decided which allies do I want in my corner? I mean, look, he was a politician. He is a politician. He's just been around the block. He's made all of his mistakes, and he knows what the limits are of his power and how to maximize his power. And that was what he sought to do.
Your conversation at the ranch continued with him outside. I like that idea of thinking about him out on the farmland and this kind of transition out of the state capital to what he's going to do. So that's where we're going to hear the next segment of the conversation.
Yes, we went outside, and we being myself and our photographer Andrew Nixon and our producer Nadine Sabai and our digital producer Emily Zentner, we all hopped on a couple of golf carts along with the governor's staff and CHP patrol, and Jerry Brown was driving the golf cart that I was on, and Calusa and Callie Brown were riding shotgun, and off we went.
It's a very different life than the life you've led over the last couple of decades, and a different change of pace. So what makes you want it?
Well, one thing, I was talking to my uncle, Harold, who was my father's brother, and he was a lawyer, and He knew the family history better than anybody. And he always said, you know, I made a mistake. I should have been a farmer. And he liked this land. He knew the history. He knew the his cousins that lived here, which I didn't really know. I know them now, but I didn't know it then. And so I thought, man, there's something about that, going back to the land. And then at some point I came across that picture of my great-grandfather, August Shuckman, with his white beard, feeding the sheep and the chickens around. And I thought to myself, that's not a bad place to be when one is 80. So I said, that's where I'm coming. And that's, so that's what I did. And I wanted to build a house here. And that's how I asked my mother to give my father's share and of the ranch. And then we got this little section, which is my personal. My wife and I own this 25 acres. Personally, the rest is owned by the family and a family corporation.
And you're going to buy a car, do your own grocery shopping, do your own
driving?
Well,
we have bought a car. Ann bought a car yesterday. She'll be driving it up.
What is it?
It's a Pacifica, a hybrid, electric.
You ready for this? You ready to be out of the governor's office?
Well, ask me that when we get out of here. So you're always asking these anticipation questions. I very much... It's interesting. Talking to you is actually interesting. So I'm so absorbed in that, I'm not thinking when you're gone, what am I going to think? But I will think when you're gone.
But I mean, you said you're going to have...
Are we going to go...
You're not having a retirement. You're having an active life.
Well, because there's a lot... First of all, this ranch has got lots to do. Just learning how to make that olive oil, finding out when to pick it, how much water to use, how to get make sure it doesn't get diseased. That's a big deal. Then I'm on the chairman of the new the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. I mean, a number of things that I'm going to be doing.
So Gavin Newsom's going to take over a state with lots of money that you think he should stash away.
Lots of money that is only temporary.
Exactly.
Because it's not like the money stays there.
He's campaigned on universal health care.
By the way, it's not even clear the money will be there because it's a prediction over the next 18 months. It's the budget reserves for the budget starting in June going for another year. So what will happen? You know, you see the stock market the last week. So that's why I'm always on guard for the downturn and trying to prevent that.
So we know that your advice to Governor-elect Newsom is to think of the worst thing that could possibly happen
and then do everything you can
to prevent it. Yeah. You've known him all his life. You've known his family.
Well, I have not known him all his life. I've known his father all my life. But I didn't know Gavin because he was born after I'd moved to Los Angeles. But I have got to know him a little bit.
So you've known the Governor-elect for...
Sometimes.
For a long time.
For a few years.
Yes, and you led Oakland as he led San Francisco across the bay. What do you like about him? Does he ever do things that get on your nerves that make you concerned about?
Not as much as you.
Gavin will be glad to hear that.
No, I think the point, Gavin comes from a politically interested family. His father was interested in politics. His grandfather was certainly very helpful to my father in the early years when he was running for the district attorney of San Francisco. So, and he himself has that interest. And given the fact that he was a supervisor and a mayor in a very contentious, diverse city, I think he's got a good... amount of experience and the kind of contention and issues that he'll find in Sacramento. So I think that's a very good preparation. That in fact, I did not have that preparation. I have a Secretary of State, which is a quiet office compared to the mayor of San Francisco. So I think that and the fact that he's been Lieutenant Governor now and on the Lands Commission, he's had a good acquaintanceship. But having said all that, he'll have his hands full because the interest groups, both left and right, are very eager to test the new governor and to get as much money, as many laws and regulations as they possibly could. And the governor, in keeping with the notion of what a governor is, it's to hold the rate of change to a certain level. That's what governors do. A governor and an engine keeps the engine from running out of control. And that's exactly what the governor has to do.
Well, how
in terms
confident
of
are you that Governor Newsom will be able to do that?
Well, I think only time will tell. I don't operate in the prophecy business like you pundits are so attracted to.
You have talked at times about things you might have done differently in your first stint as governor, criminal justice reform and criminal justice laws, and perhaps Prop 13. You said maybe you spent a little too much time running for president. I wonder if there's anything that you would have done differently in this stint as governor, or if you're
no,
in
I can't. Yeah, if you could have the 8 years and counterfactual, you could go back and do it again, you'd have all that extra experience. But not having that ability, I would say, well, what I did, I did. Now, can you imagine, in hindsight, would you do something different? I don't know, you'd have to, that's an imaginary exercise that you'd have to decide for each particular item. And I nothing strikes me right now. I'm sure that things always have more than one way to do things. I mean, there's more than one way to skin a cat. So if we want to think about it, oh, maybe we could have done something different. But just as I see it right now, I'd said what we did, what I did, what happened. I think by and large, it was pretty successful, and I wouldn't have any real changes at this point. But if he gave me enough time, I'm sure I could figure something I might have done differently.
Is your political career over, or Colusa County Supervisor?
I don't know. I don't see those are what I put into your prophecy, future fortune telling mode, and I don't find that very helpful. I find right now exciting, even talking to you. So how in the world can I think about something that isn't even in front of me? But I don't rule anything out, and I don't rule anything in.
I'm trying to pay attention to the points he's making, but I got really caught up in the relationship the two of you have. And it's a reminder that with the Capitol Press Corps, you spend a lot of time with a head of state or the leadership. And over the years, of course, you two have this relationship. He teases you. I'm not seeing the expression on his face, but when he says you annoy him more than Gavin Newsom,
doesn't like certain questions. No politician likes certain questions. Jerry Brown, I think, feels more free to express that sentiment than others with future ambitions, perhaps.
How much has it mattered to try to get along with him? You need to cover him. We need to hear from him through you, through the press corps. Do you try to have a relationship, and what kind?
Well, I mean, that's a complicated question. It's not my job to get along with anyone I cover. It's my job to tell the story, to report on what we see and what is going on in our state, because everything that's happening here is so important, particularly given California's adversarial role with the president. But, he is an interesting person to cover. Tomorrow, I've got a fun story on Morning Edition and All Things Considered with Brownism, so some of his more colorful quotes. And it was just a fun chance to empty out the reporter's notebook. But, we all know that he says entertaining things. What's less known is he can get pretty combative with questions and push back and be a little prickly, as we heard in that interview, which brings to mind a fun little reporter's notebook that Adam Nagurny of The New York Times wrote, which I just linked to on my Twitter, at AdlerBen. Tips for interviewing Jerry Brown. For one, it's not a good idea to use the word legacy in asking about the California governor's legacy. And that was how I started the interview intentionally. I kind of poked California's grizzly bear a little bit. But it is always entertaining. And we will be certainly ending an era on Monday when Governor-elect Gavin Newsom takes the oath of office.
Hmm. So much to say. We'll talk later about all these prophecy, fortune-telling, futuristic anticipation questions that you ask, okay?
Maybe you can get out to the ranch and not be quite as rushed and be able to cover a little more ground.
That's great. All right, more to come from Ben Adler. You can find more at capradio.org. Thanks to you, Nadine, Andrew, Emily, for the trip out there and for what you were able to share with us as this governor leaves the office in California.
And we've got much more tomorrow and Monday leading up to the inauguration.
Governor Brown's term does officially end Monday. Gavin Newsom will be sworn in, and you can hear more and follow the coverage of that inauguration here on CAP Radio. Coverage begins Monday at 9 a.m. Thanks again, Ben.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.